Good afternoon. I guess we'll continue with our deliberations and take up the zoning petition ZP-709. I think Marcia has a small presentation just to go through the details of the project. Amy, do you have at this point? Are you going to wait until Marcia?
Yeah.
Okay, Marcia, why don't you go ahead? Oh, and I would note for the record that Commissioner White is sitting with us in this deliberation, so. Go ahead, Marcia.
Thank you. For your just for your reference, I've given each one of you a copy of the exhibits list. I put it in front of you, on just like with the previous project. And we do have the files here. They're over there on the table if you want me to look anything up. You also have a lot of materials on the CD. So I'm just going to very quickly go through some very basic pieces about this. And I have to mention up front that my statement up here, rezoned 2,908 acres and two parcels, that was taken from the application in the findings that were submitted to you. The applicant had changed that to 2,367 and two parcels. So there have been some amendments to the amount, the size of the parcels, but they're still the two that you've seen outlined on the site plan. The changes from Mountain Area Protection Subdistrict and General Management to Plan Development Subdistrict. It's 132-megawatt wind power project. Above 2,700 feet, there would be 234 acres for construction. Again, the findings say 218 acres for construction cleared, so there is some differences in the numbers that were stated. 30 acres to remain unvegetated. The public hearing is on October 3rd and 4th, 2007. The record closed in October 22nd. Preliminary development plan, you'll notice that it says 34 turbines above 2,700 feet and 12 below, which is actually 46. There are a total of 46 sites identified, of which 44 would be developed, and that's what the discrepancy is. Same size turbines as the previous project we talked about this morning. New roads, that would be 17.4 miles of new gravel access and ridgeline road, 19 miles of upgraded land management roads, transmission lines, 3.9 miles to connect the turbines to the new Kibbe substation, and 27.7 miles of 115 kV line to go from the Kibbe substation down to the Bigelow substation in Carabasset Valley. The support activities and facilities, the maintenance and operation building, 3,600 square feet, temporary activities, gravel pits, rock crushers, concrete batch plant, and plants. I guess a plant, it would be at the O&M building, and lay-down storage areas. You've seen this before with the other projects. They all have the same components. And this is a map showing, this is Series A and Series B here. And this is the route of the transmission line down here to the Bigelow substation, going down through Jim Pond, down into Tim Pond, along the boundary, through Eustis, or through Wyman Township. And then this is taken. These are actually, well, they were yellow. Somehow or other they show up green. This shows the outline of the area to be rezoned. And there's a little bit more in that that goes up here, and that part would not be developed in that parcel. This is Kibbe Range down here. And that's all I have for you today. So.
I, again, just wanted to express my confidence in the Commission's ability to get through these deliberations this afternoon in the time allotted and to bring this application, at least to some degree, to a resolution. I think that it would be appropriate to, again, go around the table, so to speak, and give each commissioner an opportunity to identify any and all key issues that are weighing on their mind this afternoon. And I think also this morning it was appropriate, as Gwen raised, to address the issue of where the commission would like to head with this at the end of the afternoon. This morning the commission decided at the outset that it would be directing staff to prepare a particular document. And it might be helpful to staff to know that at the outset, if for the reasons stated this morning, if that's your desire with respect to this project as well.
Unless somebody objects, I would think that we'd want to proceed in the same way.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Yep.
Anybody want to start?
I'll start on the new guy.
Yeah.
I think with any wind proposal, the things that you look for, whether you're the developer or whether we are the regulator, are to determine whether the site has wind capability, to determine whether the construction, including the roads and everything, are feasible from an engineering perspective, and also whether you can get the power from the turbines to the grid. So one of the things that I'm a little confused about is what our interest in looking at the transmission line is. It seems to me that that's a very significant and perhaps controlling component of the whole thing.
Okay. Anybody else? Go ahead, Gwen.
I don't have any major concerns. I guess I'll use that word. I am concerned about some of the details of the decommissioning plan. And I'm trying to think what else. To a lesser extent here with respect to roads and impacts to mountain resources, there is a few places of specific wording within the findings that were put together by TransCanada that I would take issue and I wouldn't want to see in our findings, and I don't know. I can bring those up. I think that's pretty much it that I see are just issues that I might want to discuss.
I guess I have a few general concerns, and again would look forward to the input that folks can provide. I have general concerns about the roads and the engineering required to build these roads, as well as the applicant's experience in this type of project. I think scenic impacts are something we should discuss. And again, input I think is very, very important in this process. And I guess the question of whether or not the power can get to where it's supposed to go. I know there was a lot of discussion about congestion and things like that, and not having sort of that background, I'm not always clear on exactly how those issues have been resolved, and so we just would like to discuss that as much as we can.
I guess the only issue I have is decommission. I want to make sure that we stay consistent with especially the last application that we just approved, I believe, last week, the week before.
Uh,
I have some minor concerns, concerns about roads that I think can be addressed within a draft, a staff draft, and also the decommissioning, again. But I have to say none of these rise to the level of substantial concern, in my view.
Okay. Do you want to talk a little bit about this transmission line issue? First of all, where's Marcia? Oh, it just makes it's always confusing. Who's permitting the transmission line in this project? Is it us or DEP?
This permit would include all of the transmission line except for the section that is in DEP's jurisdiction in Eustis and in Carabasset Valley.
Okay. So the bulk of the transmission corridor is in our we're permitting it. Okay. And your question, Steve, really was is
well, I'm not sure that we've put much emphasis on the line. We've talked, and as we've seen the last couple of deliberations, we've talked a lot about the tops of the mountains. But this is a 27-mile-long cut down through the woods, and it goes to the same, well, it's not an issue anymore. It would go to the same substation that the other project went to. But then it goes on from there to yet another substation, is that correct? And I just want to make sure that the whole thing was properly laid out.
I don't know. The testimony, I thought, was fairly complete on the transmission line issue within the LURC permit. I mean, we knew the dimensions of it. I believe it was discussed as far as its scenic impact, if I recall correctly. I can't tell you right off the top of my head what the conclusions were, other than they probably were favorable since the applicant proposed it. But.
I think there was a reference to sag grading and updating the current line that's right there now.
Right.
I think that probably is even more appropriate now, but it was rehabbing what's there.
Yeah, well, I guess Steve's question, I thought, had related to the new transmission line, not the existing one.
Well, that's all right, but there was also the issue of the existing line and the fact that it had to be tightened.
Right.
And that sort of thing.
But that would
I was unclear when we had two competing proposals or two adjacent proposals, whose responsibility that was going to be to repair the existing line. But I guess now it's
at this point
anybody wants to run power over it.
It would be up to the applicant to do that.
Okay.
Otherwise, nothing's going to happen in that.
Right.
We were assured multiple times in testimony that transmission line wasn't an issue because the applicant had all kinds of economic incentive to fix it. And that was the testimony of the applicant, I believe, as well as the Maine Public Utilities Commission. So that's the way I understood it, and that we shouldn't worry about it.
Yeah, that's.
I'm not sure that that's the right conclusion, but anyway, that's.
And just as a reminder that, again, you want to stay focused on the record for this project and what is approved or not approved outside of the record of this proceeding is irrelevant.
Right.
Thank you.
He did. He told me he didn't. Catherine was worried about you, Steve, that we weren't letting you get in on it. Yeah. What about then? Well, first of all, I didn't say anything either, did I? I guess that. There were a few things raised, but as I say, I think these are legal issues, but technical issues. But there was a question raised about certain parts of the development being outside of the development zone and whether or not those were being permitted as part of what we do or would they be separate. And it'd be nice to make sure we understand clearly what that, if that's the case. I think it is. I mean, it's clearly some structures outside of the development zone that were being asked to rezone that would be permitted. And I guess the argument in the record was that we couldn't approve these items that are in the management zones, I believe, if I understood the arguments correctly. Is that?
That was the argument. How, Marcia, could you explain what the record has to say about that, any structures that are outside of the rezone but that will still be part of the final permit?
Advice I was given early on about this for not just this project but for other projects was that this was part of the preliminary plan, that these activities of necessity because of the logistics of having the turbines in a high mountain area, those facilities needed to be someplace else, but that they were facilities that were compatible with an MGN and to not approach it as a separate. We talked about separate rezonings of little pods of a DPD separately. We've talked about it also in case of Saddleback as well. So any DPD that has something outside of it, tried to approach it that way, that the facilities are necessary as support for the turbine structures, but because of the site location, conditions have to be someplace else. I don't know if that clarifies your question. I'm trying to just say this is the approach that we were taking with it.
So are we then rezoning little places, or are we saying that they can be built in the MGN without rezoning?
We were approaching it that way, okay. Yeah. Just because otherwise you've got a little tiny DPD sort
right.
of off on the side. You remember with Saddleback, mm-hmm. we did that temporarily.
Gwen, you're putting on your glasses. That means you want to talk? Or
yeah.
Whether this is going to follow. I now that we've all gone around and sort of mentioned the things that are of concern to us here, I do think that we need to with respect to, I mean, apparently for all of us, we're comfortable with this location and some of the issues that we talked about in the prior project. How this project fits into the overall landscape. This isn't as outstanding an area, and I hesitate to use that word, but I think it doesn't rise to the same level of uniqueness, such that what I see at the Western Mountains or the I can't remember what we called it, but the mountains in that region that we were looking at, as well as the Mahoosics or the Katahdin. I don't think it is that category of an area. I think that the wind farm, and it is even larger, fits better into the landscape just because the elevations are lower and more rolling. And I think visual scenic inventory that was done here showed, you know, gave us that testimony that proved that, I guess. I feel that we need to make some sort of a statement of why this, why that was satisfactory or that those criteria are met.
Thank you, Gwen. Ed?
I agree with Gwen that we should make some kind of statement, and I agree with the statement that she made.
Thank you. Rebecca?
Can I agree to agree? I think and it sort of gets back to Ed's point earlier today that if we don't talk about the benefits or the positive aspects and just the negative, we may not have we're not really fleshing out the issue as much as I think we should, and that this may be useful going forward for consistency's sake. So I think just because we may not have concerns about a certain part of this plan doesn't mean we shouldn't discuss it and sort of be on the record as saying, yep, we And I guess I'll just jump in on the scenic resources. I think that I would tend to agree. It seems as though, and I don't want to denigrate this area at all. I'm not saying that it's not scenic, but I think the point was made in a lot of the testimony that it was it's scenic, but it's not super significant. It doesn't rise to the level that, as Gwen said, the Mahoosicks, Baxter, and the Longfellows. And I think the other point that was important is because of the way the rest of the topography is, what views you have of the farm and the components are fairly small, whether it's the tips of a blade or just the top of a turbine. And I am almost cringing at saying this, that the CLUP is very anthropogenic. It talks about the human perspective of these natural resources, not the value of the resources just because they are. But in saying that, you know, the CLUP really looks at it from a human perspective, and I'm not saying these are out of sight, out of mind, but they don't have I don't think the scenic impacts are as dramatic because they're sort of, they'll be more tucked away by virtue of the topography and, you know, the surrounding area. So as I said, I cringe at saying that, but we have to work with what we have to work with, and the CLUP tends to look at this from an anthropogenic perspective.
Yeah, I agree. This is a very different setting than others we've looked at, and I think the record was pretty complete in the potential scenic impact of these relative to the site, and it had a different impact, at least on me, and it didn't raise to the same level of concerns that we've in other projects. It's just an extremely different site, given the topography and the arrangement of all of the features on it are much, much different. Steve?
I think it's part of the record, but I put some faith in the previous commission and their deliberations over this area, and there were some comparative slides and testimony. Not reading the record from 96, I'm not sure exactly what went on, but of course the site was approved. However, this brings us to decommissioning, and actually the site was decommissioned after approval. So I think there may be some lessons in that. I'm not sure, but and I'm not sure that's part of the record either, so it may be off base.
Well, there were plenty of references in the record to the prior site, the prior project. No doubt about that.
When you talk about the 90s, the Kennetech site being decommissioned, are you alluding to the fact that that can happen? We may get a permit.
The financial end of it fell short, as we discussed earlier.
That's right.
And there had to be amends made or some stuff cleaned up. I don't think there was much, but.
Wasn't any construction other than Met Towers, but your point is well taken that we thought that it was a going concern, a large corporation, and it did fall apart.
Did you have a decommissioning plan in place with that application?
We did, however, I don't think that it was thought out as well as we have tried to do with these.
Does anybody want to talk about the decommissioning? I mean, is some concern expressed about the fact that it might not be that you were concerned about it? Should we put those on the table?
Well, I think we want to try to be consistent.
Right.
And that it appears that what we've been moving toward, is some kind of secured financing for decommissioning, either through some kind of sort of escrow account or some kind of letter of credit for a particular period of time that guarantees that money will be available so that it doesn't fall on the public and the public purse, or that abandoned towers are never removed. So, I think we're looking for developing sort of consistent language that would be applied to most of these projects, if not all. So I would like to see that. And perhaps I think that's what other people are alluding to. I don't want to speak for other people, but I think that's what we're talking about here.
I agree with that, Ed. I would prefer not to see any cash set aside, but a line of credit that's monitored so that it won't tie up the principals.
And for a particular period of time.
Yeah, not sure.
For infinity, yeah.
You know, we spent a lot of time with the UPC project, and we finally agreed with them that they didn't need to have all of the cash available at the beginning. And we accepted, I think, the fact that once they got these things up, no matter what happened, they would continue to run. Even if they became outmoded, they would still be producing some power. Whether or not we want to continue on that line, I guess, is up to us now. But we did have a plan that was pretty well laid out that had numbers put to it, that so we knew when we were going to have how much money. So if we're to be consistent, it seems that we ought to be thinking along those lines again.
Okay. Gwen?
I think that what is proposed in this project with respect to decommissioning is a slightly different mechanism than what we approved in the Evergreen project. And this one, it looks to me, is tied to TransCanada's credit rating and when it falls below investment grade, it says here. And then, this is not my strong point. I think that there's details here, and that I don't know. I guess what I would want to be sure of is that. You know, we do indeed cover all the bases and have whatever documentation we need, that it is such that there will indeed be funds available if decommissioning is needed. And I can understand that there's different ways of going about that. And I guess I would probably look for a recommendation from somebody who has more experience with these kinds of things than I have. That could come from the staff when the decision is written up. Unless somebody here on the commission has more to say about that, I suppose.
Don't we have a record to react to in that regard as well? Amy, will any further information be brought forward to talk about decommissioning? What we have is what we have, correct?
Right. The record's closed. But the procedural status that you're in is... you're presented with the question whether or not to approve the preliminary plan, which sets the standard by which you would make your final determination. So if the commission directed the staff to draft a document for approval and you wanted to make sure that you saw whatever you wanted to see in that decommissioning plan, to the extent you could specify that at this point, the staff could take a look at that for you and bring it back to you.
So you're saying that could be put in as a condition?
Well, it would be a component of a preliminary approval that would be brought back to you for a final vote.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
My concern is, first of all, I agree. I agree entirely. I think the point is we want to make sure that there is funding available should decommissioning be required. However, the exact mechanism, I think we want to establish a precedent for a mechanism, but the exact nature of that mechanism, I don't think we should dictate at this point, not having experience with wind power nor understanding the markets completely. So I guess what I'm saying is, I don't want to put the onus on staff, but if there's a better way to do this, as long as we get the result we want, I would give the private sector the flexibility to devise that in such a way that makes sense in terms of their financial mix and their operating regime. I think we ought to be.
I'm not sure, but the only way we probably have to allow that to happen now, given the nature of this, is we write something up and they can comment on it. Because if you were to say that we would propose approval of this project, there are three. We're going to have three different votes on this,
right.
One, including one today. There'd be then we have to formally
right.
approve today's vote, and then we have to approve the final development
right.
plan. So each one of those stages offers an opportunity to review what that says and
right.
make modifications.
Right.
And at that point, we can let the parties have some comment,
okay.
whereas opposed to
right.
today, I can't. So.
Right. No, I understand that today, but yeah. I think I'm just – the point I'm trying to make is I don't think we ought to be in a position that we ought to set out what it is we want to achieve and that the exact mechanism –
Right.
I don't think any of us have
right.
I'll speak for myself. I certainly don't have
right.
sufficient knowledge of the financial implications mm-hmm. of a decommissioning plan. I think in general what we've required before we could require again, but if there's a better approach, I'd be willing to listen to it. I guess that's what I'm saying.
So you're saying it's the result that we're looking for?
Yes, the result.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's fine.
And yeah. I believe whatever steps that we're going to be taking, that we're consistent.
Right.
That's my main thing.
Well, we've established a precedent at least for decommissioning,
right.
Which is not necessarily in our purview to do, right? But we have established it in the permits we've mm-hmm. issued, right?
Yeah.
So I think we can continue down that path.
I think that we do have a legal basis to require decommissioning. And because of any possible, to prevent any undue adverse impacts at the point in time a wind farm no longer operates, I mean, it would not be good to have turbines in a dilapidated condition that might collapse. It would not be good to have turbines that are standing up without any benefits and still perhaps providing bird mortality. So I think we certainly have the standing to require decommissioning of these projects. I guess what I would ask, and I think we did set a precedent in the Evergreen project where the applicant provided, I guess in the rezoning, and help me with this a little bit, Amy, in the rezoning there was a general plan for decommissioning, and then when we got the development proposal, the Amy came with us with an alternate, another possible approach to consider, and then so we had both that one and the applicants to look at. In this particular instance, this to me looks like it's a slightly different approach. And I guess I would hope that staff and Amy would just take a look at this, and if they felt that there was something that could be done to maybe improve it, or to bring that before us.
Yeah,
there's been some discussion about the desired result, and we can certainly bring you anything that you want. And if maybe you could just articulate for us a bit more about what it is. In terms of the result that you're looking for, and we can make an effort to bring you a document that would allow you to achieve that.
Okay. It's
Melissa's phone.
It's not mine. It's mine.
What I see that's different here is that the letter of credit, and correct me if I'm wrong here, does not be secured until the credit rating for TransCanada falls below investment grade. And in this instance, TransCanada is a huge or a very large corporation and seems to have considerable financial capability, and perhaps that's why we might accept this kind of this might be an okay approach. There may be instances where this would not be to our satisfaction, just given the size of the organization or the of the organization, and so. I guess I just that is a concern that I have, and that maybe this isn't an approach we'd want to use with all. Is it appropriate in this particular instance because of the size of the corporation?
On the other hand, if we wait until TransCanada's credit rating falls below a certain level, are they going to be able to get a line of credit?
And also, Exxon was a very large company.
Yeah.
Yep.
Enron. Enron, excuse me.
I think, you know, I would like to make the focusing on decommissioning and financing it not very onerous to the applicant, because you're asking them to finance a failure of their project. And I know that nobody wants that, certainly from the applicant side. However, it's a legitimate request. So I go back to, and this would work for small and large applicants, that somehow not tie up their operating capital that would allow them to improve the operation or enhance it because they have, you know, they've committed money to the failure of their operation or restoring them. So that's a philosophical. It's mm-hmm. certainly not an order that can be written.
I think you're on the right track, except that it's not only failure. I mean, this thing might exist for 20 or 25 years, and then new technology comes along that says, you know, you ought to be looking at solar or whatever, and they could just walk away, even though it was a successful operation. What we want is when it's no longer functioning, it needs to be taken down and the area restored. For whatever reason, for right. failure, for outmoding, for anything.
I'm hoping the market will take care of that, that they still have a development permit for that area, and it may be used. They can just haul off the blades and put solar collectors. I mean, this is all conjecture. But anyway, I certainly agree with the fact that decommissioning should be part of it.
Right.
But I would hate to see aggressive entrepreneurial companies worrying about how they're going to finance their own failure. It's counterproductive.
I think we're aren't we in philosophical agreement with regard to that, that we don't want to, in an undue way, over-encumber, and that we don't want to redirect capital away from an appropriate development in order to meet the needs of decommissioning, and that there may be a number of ways to do that, as long as there is sufficient funds to provide for removal of structures and to mitigate the extent reasonable and proper for any kind of disturbance that has been undertaken to natural resources. And that as long as that's what we're trying to get out of this.
And I think it would be nice if it was scalable so it would work for small and large.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, does anyone disagree with that?
Well, I think you're right. So are we asking the staff to put that into
right.
Well, in some form that will have it forever?
Yeah, well, that would be great. But I'm saying maybe we already have it in the previous approval, but this may be an improvement over that. I'm just saying we should be open.
Yeah. Well, I think what we have in one approval instructs us for the next one, but it doesn't give us an institutional memory. Maybe there's a way to put it in the club or something like that eventually. But you're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're on the right track.
Well, I think that it's clear that in the event of any type of approval here, that a decommissioning plan should be part of the final development plan,
right?
And that it should at least give us some reasonable assurance that it can be decommissioned in some rational way. So. Anything else on that issue? Anything else that you want to deal with?
Gwen, Rebecca, and I also mentioned roads. Yeah. And I don't think this raises the level of concern here isn't of the same magnitude as it was with regard to the previous project, because we're not dealing with the same types of slopes or the same types of altitude. But I think that I have a concern that the roads be done correctly. And therefore, I think we want to take special note of that somehow in a document that comes forward. I guess these aren't just building roads from here to your mother's house. You know, we're pretty sophisticated, and I think we want to make sure that sophistication is recognized in design, construction, and maintenance.
Yeah. Yes, because as I indicated before, the applicant takes on a significant risk here, building in this kind of in these conditions, even though these seem to be at least seem to be less severe than what we've experienced. I guess based on your earlier comments, though, that I thought that this applicant had the plan submitted and all, and really seemed to be much more complete in regard to roads and that sort of thing than perhaps we've seen on other projects.
Yes.
So there was an incredible amount of upfront engineering done here.
Yes, and I think that gives me
indicated
a great deal
quite
of
a bit of study.
Yeah.
On the project site. So for that, alleviated some of those concerns. And I believe that Dave Roach's testimony was generally in concurrence with that we have on the record sufficient evidence that the roads were mm-hmm. properly laid out and that could be built as specified with that. And the applicant, I think the applicant is well aware of the risks that they are taking on by... And I know somebody raised concerns about potential experience. I gathered based on the testimony, again, indicated the applicant had a fairly substantial amount of experience constructing these types of projects. So so should be able to have the engineering competence to deal with them, right?
That having been said, I think that each time one of these is built in Maine or in any high mountain areas in the Northeast, it's an experiment in a way. There are new conditions, and I think each one should be looked at to see what could be learned from it going forward. So as we set up criteria, we certainly want to be able to learn as we go along.
Mm-hmm. I think there's room for that, too. Dave Roach seems to be very cognizant of varying conditions that may surprise him and probably would surprise the engineers. And I think there's a dialogue that I read in the application that addresses that.
Right.
I'm sorry, Gwen. Rebecca?
I guess I'd sort of want to chime in on that. That on the one hand, I don't want to say that the challenges are any less significant on this project. There may be differences, some differences in slopes and things like that, but there are differences in altitude, which translates into precipitation and temperatures, which are part of the not only make the building, the construction process different, but also lends to the vegetation and the amount of water in the soil. So I think I'd be hesitant to say this is going to be an easier job, but I do feel that I have more confidence, I feel more comfortable with the engineering and the proposals that have been done here, partly because of, I think Mr. Roach acknowledged that. He said that he feels that they've demonstrated that they understand the issues. I think Mr. Goulet has done this kind of work up in Canada somewhere, that this is not new to them. It's territory that they've done this kind of work before, and the level of detail within the application seemed a lot greater. And I guess where I'm sort of going with this is that I think on many levels, TransCanada has set some standards that if we're going to talk about consistency, then these are the kinds of studies, the level of detail that I would hope to see going forward in other projects. Now, not every project is the same, but they clearly have done their work. And because of that, I do feel more comfortable that there will be less opportunity for, you know, sort of the catastrophic impacts that I think we're concerned about.
With respect to building roads, and just looking at the, and I realize that Marsh is going to be writing the language for for us. How's that? At this point, I guess what I'd like to see, you know, there's some wording in here that's proposed by TransCanada with respect to roads. In addition, Mr. Roque recommended and petitioner stated that it intends to hire a third-party field engineer with local knowledge of soil conditions as a part of the geotech team to determine specific construction techniques. What I would want to see added there is that this engineer that is hired is somebody that is experienced in building roads in these types of environments. And I think that's really important. I mean, we're looking for somebody that has done this before. I guess that's all I have to say about roads. So.
Okay. Thank you, Gwen. Anything else?
What about that issue? It's not up to us to select the contractors. How do we go about assuring that Gwen's concern is addressed?
Well, again, because this is in the context of a preliminary plan approval, what you're doing in this document is setting the standard. So you have expressed some concern about the ability, capacity to meet an engineering standard that's acceptable to you. So when this comes back to you, again, assuming that you approve this project preliminarily, that preliminary document is the standard that you're setting. This is what we want to see achieved. Make sure that, applicant, that when you bring this back to us for final approval, that you are able to meet the standard that we have set in this preliminary document.
Thank you.
Anything else that anybody? Birds, bats?
Well, I sort of wanted to talk a little bit about the wildlife issues, and I think there were some concerns during the hearings about some of the credibility of the witnesses, or not the witnesses, but the testimony as to why some birds were seen that weren't expected to be seen and why some weren't seen that were expected to be seen. And I, after reading through the record, I feel confident that, though, in my mind, that those issues have been resolved. I think they were... for instance, the bird that was not seen that was expected to be seen, that was only on one particular data study or one study, and it was seen at other times. And so there was sort of the devil is in the details. But what I came away with is a sense that, again, that TransCanada has sort of, again, set a standard of bird and bat monitoring and impacts to animals and vegetation that I would like to see applied going forward. That this was I'm impressed by the level of detail and the amount of work and the willingness, I think, to work with stakeholders to try to make sure that concerns were addressed and that that's... it's a pretty high standard, and I guess I'd like to see whatever recommendation we come up with, that there is a recognition that IFNW in particular said this is the standard that we want to see other proposals, whether they're wind power or some other kind of proposal, but these are the kinds of standards we'd like to see met.
Mr. Chairman, I'm prepared to make a motion.
Go ahead.
I move that staff prepare a recommendation for approval of the project that reflects the discussion that the commission has had here this afternoon.
I'll second it.
Moved and seconded that we direct the staff to prepare a recommendation to approve whatever this zoning petition, CO709.
Can I make...
Any other questions or comments before we vote, Steve?
I just want to make a comment. I meant to mention it before and I forgot, but we were talking about the level of the professionalism in the application. One of the items which we saw is the contribution to the Stratton-Eustis community of a fixed amount of dollars, which I think answers some of the concerns about, you know, maybe only 5 to 10 full-time jobs, but here's the equivalent of 2 or 3 full-time jobs. Now you go run with it. And I think it will be interesting to watch and see how the community reacts to that and handles it, because we haven't seen that before, and I think it's important.
I guess before we step away, I'm wondering, and please tell me if I'm going down the wrong path, and I can't remember what the decision was, this idea of conservation elsewhere, is that something that's not part of the project, is that correct? So that's not something we can discuss here, or no? Well, it seems like it's a fairly significant part of this whole application, and I didn't know if that's something that maybe no one else feels that way, but it's something that, I want to make sure that we cover all the bases, that this, whatever document we come up with really reflects what the issues are, whether we say it was sort of a non-issue because it wasn't troublesome, or it was an issue because it was troublesome, that this document reflects what our concerns are, or what was perhaps precedent-setting, and I would just throw it out there to see how anyone else feels about what their thoughts are.
I think Amy can correct me here, but I think there were two elements to that. One was there was some off-site mitigation proposed, which I believe I ruled wasn't relevant to this discussion. Then there were some on-site commitments made in terms of future development on the site. And those have a little different impact, but I don't think that either one of those made a whole lot of difference in how I viewed the project. The project was the project, and those things are just, they're separate issues in my mind anyway. Amy, have I answered that correctly?
Well, the record in these types of projects, of course, are vast. So it is your job, it's your duty to weigh that evidence. So what you have done today through these deliberations has provided guidance and direction to your staff to go and draft a document for you to reflect your intent, and we'll bring that back to you for your final vote and approval.
And I guess I would think that that document would reflect a lot of what's in what we received, these conclusions about. We certainly aren't going to have a very one-page document. We've got to make conclusions about all of the things that are relevant to our standards in here. So I think the document's going to be fairly lengthy, just as it was in the Stetson case or any other, addressing all the issues. I think, is that, if that's your question.
Well, I think that's sort of my concern. This is a situation where we're directing the staff to...
Right.
And what I guess I have a concern that if we don't raise it here as an issue, it's not going to find its way into that document. And because this is new, I don't know how this will. I mean, I don't know what it will include. If it will include everything in the finding of facts and sort of be dismissed as a non-issue. Do you know what I'm saying? I just want to make sure that the documents, or I would hope that the documents would reflect all of these issues, because they may not be significant in this particular one, but it may be significant in another one. And so the fact that we've actually thought about, resolved, discussed.
Right. I think this goes back to a comment that I made this morning, and it would apply equally this afternoon, that in the time that we're allotted in the context of such an expansive record, that the commission cannot sit here today and draft every sentence for the staff, but based on your deliberations and our understanding of what the commission wants to see in a preliminary plan, either denial or grant, that staff has, I guess, heard you. And your vote, the way that you've set this up, is that staff is going to draft this document and bring it back to you so that... You actually will have an opportunity to make sure that it accurately reflects your intent in terms of the full text of your approval or denial document.
Rebecca, can I ask you a question of clarification? Are you talking about land set aside, like essentially conservation land? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, actually, I'm talking about, I think, two different things. I initially started talking about whether or not anyone thought it was worthwhile to talk about, I think it was range C and D and part of A being set aside, but then also, I don't know if you call it a side agreement with the, I wasn't clear in my mind which if we could talk about that quote side agreement, whether that was something we wanted to raise. But my second issue is that when we get staff recommendations brought to us and then we vote for or against, they're jam-packed with everything and they tend to reflect the whole record. But we don't necessarily focus on the whole record. As we're deciding, there may be one or two things. And I just want to make sure, I guess in my mind, I'm concerned that whatever document we get back is going to be somehow the short version, and it may only focus on one or two things. And I think that would be a disservice going forward. Do you know what I'm saying?
I have some real concerns about where you're going. I think we have to be careful about the way in which we count, if you will, conservation easements outside of concept plans. Concept plans have a specific requirement for a balance which can be met through conservation easements. My understanding is that the creation of the DPD and in the rezoning, we do not have that authority to create a positive public benefit. And I think to take notice of that in achieving a positive public benefit may be troublesome in the sense that are we implying that any future project has to, in other words, are we going to confiscate land in order to, or can a project that is less than beneficial achieve that benefit by going out and creating conservation easements? I don't think we want to get down that road. I do understand, though, that for mitigation purposes, if we do look at off-site mitigation, there may be an issue there. I don't think that either one of those issues really is present, and I think it's great that TransCanada has decided to do this, and I think we can say that's wonderful, but I think we want to be careful about saying that it has any regulatory bearing, if I'm making my point correctly.
Is this discussion in the record now? Off-site mitigation or off-site benefit?
I'm not sure here. We'll have to clarify this with Marsha, but I'm pretty sure I issued a, we had a ruling from the chair that one of those was not relevant.
Right.
We can verify that. I may be mistaken, but in any event, that the Mahusik business was not relevant to this proceeding.
That's my understanding.
It won't appear anywhere in here.
And my point in raising that was just exactly Ed's feedback. We all have, as I mentioned earlier today, we all have skills and talents and experiences, and as I'm mulling those things over in my head, really what I was just looking for is if anyone wanted to comment on that, any kind of feedback, and I value particularly your thought process. So that's really all I wanted to do is just see if there was anyone that had any concerns, wanted to address it, or if it was just something we didn't want to. But that doesn't get to my secondary concern, which is
whatever decision document we draft, my understanding, it has to have in, it has to address all the review criteria, it has to speak to them and say, we looked at them, here's the facts that we think we have in the record, here's what we think they mean, and here's our conclusion, that there's no, either that they met the test, or there's no undue adverse impact, or whatever the conclusion, whatever that criteria requires us to reach. And that'll be part of this document that we get in the end for both the preliminary and the final plan. So
then that addresses my concerns.
It's not going to be a one-page document that says, well, we agreed it was a great idea, so go ahead and do it.
Right. Well, and that's, I don't mean to sound naive, but that's what I thought. Gosh, it's sort of getting back to Ed.
These are all, I think you all understand, these are very much, in my view, they're legal binding contracts between us, between the people of the state of Maine and the applicant about what they're going to do, and that's what makes them presumably stand up in court. All right. Any questions more? Ready to vote? All those in favor? Okay, I guess I don't need to call for any more of the votes. Marcia gets you. Did you get that, Marcia?
Pardon?
It was unanimous. Okay.
He's ready to call for it.
I would like to. What's that, Steve?
Well, it's all right. As long as you just use, as long as you declare the vote.
I've declared that the motion carried. Okay. Just as a one thing, Marcia, as you're reviewing this, I would like you to consider the conditions that I had proposed on the prior one regarding some minimal reporting requirements on the part of the applicant to tell us what they achieved with their project. I mean, we would really like to know in some formal way that they did, in fact, generate electricity, and that it would be interesting to know what the capacity factors were, and I'd like to know which plants got shut down and so on and so forth. Now, I'm probably you can't tell us all that stuff, but the more you can tell us, I think, going forward, this will make it easier for you as a future applicant and or other future applicants, because obviously my view is wind power, this isn't the last one we're going to see. I hope it's the last one I see, but... anyway, with that, we don't need to prolong this any further. The commission will be here tomorrow starting at 8:30 for two more weeks, so you're welcome to join us, as always. We appreciate those who came today. Thank you very much.
Drive safely.